Hello, everyone. This is Premier Chess CEO, National Master Evan Rabin, and I'm here to record episode 245 of the Premier Chess podcast, where every week we interview great chess professionals, business coaches, attorneys, many others who have found their passion in whatever it is that they do. This week, we have Amanda Ray Hambrick Ashcraft, who is the founder of Raising Imagination, an incredible nonprofit. Where she does a lot of great work in sort of the interfaith community, dealing with racial issues and a whole lot more. And she's also full-time as the executive minister at Middle Collegiate Church, which I believe is like maybe even the oldest church in the country, or like
That's quite old.
Right? So
oldest, longest, continuous functioning Protestant church in America.
Wow, that's incredible to be part of such such history. So I actually met Amanda recently. Her kid actually played in one of our tournaments recently. Hope to see them again, of course, at our next tournament coming up on the 12th, March 12th. But how's everything going today?
Things are good today, Evan. When we talked about finding a time to record this, I was excited about March 1st as it's the kickoff to Women's History Month and women's equality and intersectional feminism are passions of mine. So I thought that was kind of kismet for us to record on the first day of Women's History Month.
So tell me, why obviously women, are important, especially, there needs to be a lot more women in the chess world. Mm-hmm. We've had some great female chess professionals on the podcast, from Grandmaster Susan Polgar to Elisa Melikina, who's a phenomenal chess player and attorney, many others. Why is Women's History Month so important to you?
From a young age, I've always been energized by this idea of women power, girl power, whatever you want to call it. And that kind of understanding of what that means has waxed and waned over time as I've grown broader lenses and understanding of how to see the world. When I was growing up in small town Kentucky, it was only a gender issue for me. And as I have grown in my racial studies, in my religious studies, in my class studies, in my social justice studies, I've really understood it to be the women's equality movement, one that has to be undergirded and led by a sense of racial justice. Meaning, if we look at the women's movement, suffrage, for example, white women did a lot of harm in that. And the way that they chose their gender over, chose their race over their gender, thereby leaving Black women behind. And so I think we can't really talk about women's History Month and women's studies without an understanding that we actually have to be anti-racist in that and understanding that if it's just a white women's history, then we are really that's a violent understanding and really harmful of understanding of what Women's History Month can be. So why am I passionate about it? I think that our country exists in a lot of disinformation and lack of information. And there's so many people that when we're just able to say, hey, but did you know XYZ, all of a sudden lights turn on for them. And more often than not, positive social change happens because of it. I went to the young adult book launch for Heather McGee's book, The Sum of Us. I don't know if you're familiar with that. But it's a great, the adult version came out in 2021, New York Times bestseller. But the whole premise is that let's teach American history through the, with an economic focus, but really showing how racism actually hurts all of us. And, you know, Heather talked about how so many times when she goes and talks, gives the stories from this book, and she goes on tour and shares with people, they just say, well, I didn't know. And now that I do know, I'm going to do better and I'm going to commit to do better. So I, part of my passion is this sort of African understanding of Sankofa. We look behind us so that we can look forward and do better.
Yeah, well, I think that's a lot of what history is, right? Looking back to see, you know, where mistakes were and, you know, how you could, you know, continue to improve, you know, right? You know, as a society. Yeah, well, you raised, you know, of course, you know, some very important points. I told you before, actually, we've had one great podcast episode with two of my very good friends, Rabbi Levi Welton, who obviously is a rabbi, and Gregory Livingston, who's a big minister like yourself. And I actually first met Gregory Livingston on MLK Day in 2020 when he and Levi partnered to do a march together in City Hall, which was you know, incredible experience. My good friend Christine Assard was in New York at the time and came along as well. So yeah, I mean, it was definitely you know, a fascinating, you know, eye-opening experience, and you know, wanted them to you know, cover that here as well. So
yes, absolutely.
So tell me, you know, a little bit more about Raising Imagination and, you know, some of the work you're doing, dealing with some of these racial issues and injustice and so forth.
Oh, I would love to. And just a small note, so that I could focus more on Raising Imagination. Now I'm just consulting with Middle Church. So I'm still a minister there, but no longer full time. Just wanted to throw that out there. But yeah, Raising Imagination, I kind of dreamed up back in like 2018, I think, we're about 2 years from, you know, the very politically divisive Trump election of 2016. And I recognized that there was a void for conversations where people might see themselves or see a commonality in something that then could lead them to change the way that they believe. And I'll say a little bit more there. I read a book once that said that the space in someone's mind to actually conceptualize change, like changing what you think, is so small, like next to nothing, unless you have a prior shared experience. And then all of a sudden, if you can tap into that shared experience, your mind opens up a little bit to be able to conceptualize change. So I thought, okay, well, that's so interesting. Well, where are the places then that I could kind of tap into people who I have a lot of similarities with that then we might be able to move and change together? And so I thought, okay, well, what are the things about me that someone might see themselves in? I'm a white woman. I grew up in the South. I'm a Christian. I'm a mom. Mm-hmm. Those are things, especially in the social media age, that people tap into. And so I kind of focused also on Instagram as a platform to kind of grow a conversation around this, a movement building platform, if you will. And so I started the page, a page there, and have intentional conversations around politics, social issues, religion, and parenting. And what I have found is that people sometimes will come for the pretty pictures and the just like straight New York with kids stuff, the realness of it, and kind of connect themselves somewhere there. Oh yeah, I have a kid. I was also, my, you know, childcare fell through today too. Like I talked about when we started today, Evan,
right.
And I was up all night too. So like I can relate to that person. And so you're relating all of a sudden in this space that allows your brain to be open to change. And now we're going to talk about something that might actually stretch you a little bit. We're going to talk about the fact that the suffrage movement was laced with white women who did some really shitty things. And that might be uncomfortable, but we're here and we have hopefully created a space, a container for some change. Now that's not, and when I say that, it sounds like I've got all the answers and I've got everything figured out. And that's really not the case. And that's why I really love the name Raising Imagination, because this is work that we do together. And it is not a like, hey, let me come and share you all this divine even knowledge that I have, but rather let's talk about things that matter. Let's talk about what's keeping you up at night. Let's talk about why, public schools aren't funded the way they need to be funded. Let's talk about why there's so much rising anti-Semitism. Let's talk about why we send our kids to school with a fear that they're going to be shot. Let's talk about these things and let's see if we can create together avenues for change. The name itself, Raising Imagination, has like a triple meaning. You know, one, and you can stop me anytime because I'll just keep talking, Evan.
It's all good information, so okay, that's great.
Okay, one, we are literally raising imaginations in our homes, right? If we are caregiving or if we are parents, we have young minds in our home and we are raising them. But secondly, those little people are actually raising us. They're raising our imaginations to think about how we might create a better world for all of us. And I'll give you a great example. I took my then 3-year-old, the one who did the chess tournament, Zane, I took him to a rally for gun reform right after the Parkland shooting, I think. You know, he's 3 years old. And so I'm trying to like talk to him about like, hey, we're going to this rally, you know, to support stronger gun laws. You know, what would you like to write on a sign to hold up at this rally? And he said, why do you have that gun? And I thought that was such a profound question that ultimately is at the center of this conversation. Why do we have guns? You know, like it's not, maybe we should just strip back the conversation of, you know, left or right, whether it be politics or religion, let's strip back background checks, bump stocks, you know, whatever the policy on the ballot is. Let's just go back and ask ourselves, why do we have a culture that needs guns, period? You know, why do we have guns? And in that moment, I was like, that's a perfect example of how children actually raise all of our imaginations for a better world. And finally, the things that we talk about at Raising Imagination, the workshops that I offer, the ways that we engage with one another, collectively raise our imagination for a better world. And that kind of concept that we need to be prophetic, we need to be able to speak the world that we want to have is a really, really biblical, it's a real biblical pillar as well. We have to be able to speak into existence the future that we desire for ourselves, for our families, for those that we love, for the world.
Yeah, well, I think that is incredibly important, and it's important to, of course, teach kids, you know, these values at a young age. You know, U.S. Chess, for instance, had a slogan for a while: "Push pawns, not drugs." You know, you know, for instance, my friend Orrin Hudson, who's been on the podcast, is a motivational speaker. He actually runs a nonprofit called Be Someone. And, you know, it's a lot of different lines, you know, about that. You know, where tell students to, you know, make every move, you know, count. And I can't think of a lot of his things right now. But for instance, I'm seeing one line, you know, brain before bullets, think it out, don't shoot it out.
That's great.
You know, so. It's important to you know, teach value you know, early on. So how do you think to take a step back, you know, why have you gotten, I mean, I'm sure at the end of the day it's, you know, change choice or whatnot, but you know, why do you encourage him to, you know, go to tournaments, and, you know, where do you see the value in chess?
Yeah. That's a great question. We really try to allow our children to dabble into a variety of different activities. And we're very intentional about debunking societal gender norms. That's one thing that is really important to us. So for example, I'm wearing a pink hoodie here, but it's actually my husband's. we think that there are very subtle and non-subtle ways that we can do that. So if a kid of ours, you know, regardless if it's our daughter or one of our daughters or one of our sons, you know, wants to dance, we will absolutely let that happen. If they want to play the flute, if they want to play soccer, you know, whatever it is, we're going to encourage that. And so Zane actually showed an interest in chess, mostly because of my dad. My dad is a big mm-hmm. chess player. I'm sure he thinks it's just hilarious that I'm doing a podcast from a chess podcast. So I grew up around a chess player and him, and he has wanted for so long for some of us to kind of bite the chess bug, if you will. And recently, actually, when he was here helping after the birth of my most recent child, you know, he got out the chessboard and played with all of our kids. And Zane decided that he wanted to take an after-school chess club. So, of course, you know, we signed him up for that at his public school. And a friend there who I believe you know, Rowena, Hero's mom.
Yep.
Tipped us off about the tournament. And so we're like, sure, we'll give it a try. So that's kind of how that started. And, you know, what we like about it is it's a game that takes some intentionality and some focus. And in a world that is so rapid response and tech heavy, chess is a nice reprieve from that. You know, you're not going to be able to sit down and have instant gratification from a game of chess. You're going to have to wrestle with it. You're going to have to sit with it. And I think, you know, at a meta, even theological level, wrestling with the stuff of life and sitting with dilemmas is a really, really important skill for us to be able to have. You know, Zane didn't win one game that Saturday. It was his first tournament of any kind. And, you know, he was feeling down about it. And I was like, dude, you did it. Look, you did it. You showed up. It was a new thing. You played four rounds. You got a trophy, which I think is a really great thing you do for the rookies.
Sure.
You know, you show up and you participate and you get a thing that says, hey, you did this. And we see you. We're proud of you. You know, everybody matters. So we like that about it. As well. You know, I think just going back to like the other kind of like more meta thinking with it, you know, it is Women's History Month. So I have to ask you, because what's the deal here? Is the queen the most valuable or is it the king?
So it's a good question. You know, for one, before I get into that question, before I get distracted. So for one, yeah, I mean, props to your kid for, you know, getting out there. You know, very often I'll tell, you know, parents and students, oh, you should go, you know, play a tournament, or actually have three adult beginner students that I've been, you know, working with myself for a long time. I don't teach that much. I mostly manage 50 coaches from the podcast, other stuff. But I do have, you know, some students that, you know, learn with me directly. And, you know, look, you know, I have a couple of adult beginner students who just, they don't want to go out and play. So, you know, so I explain all the time. You know, when I was in second grade, I was in the Churchill Chess Club with my first coach, Shanaz Kennedy. And, you know, when 2 months later, I played my first tournament. A month after that, I went to the Nationals, and I pretty much never looked back. Now I'm, you know, running a more than full-time chess company, you know, running programs in 80 schools and, you know, working with Google, Citigroup, major corporations, right? You know, doing a lot. But so the truth is, yes, I do think it's important to, you know, just go out and play, you know, over-the-board chess. And by the way, you know, in full transparency, you know, I actually have mixed feelings about running rookie sections, you know, where every single kid, you know, wins a trophy. You know, honestly, that comes to a case where, as a coach, I don't particularly love it. I think kids should learn how to, even early on, be competitive and try to win. And it does actually run into issues too. You know, then kids start playing the rated section and, you know, they go 0-4 and they're like, oh, where's my trophy? Mm-hmm. You know, or even they go 2 out of 4, you know, and they're like, oh, well, I won 2 games. Did I win a trophy? You know, and it's like, no, sorry, you don't. But, you know,
like intentional conversation along the way.
But look, you know, frankly, at the end of the day, a lot of parents like yourself, you know, probably wouldn't come through a tournament if there was just the rated section. Mm-hmm. You know, which, by the way, my first tournament ever was a rated section. So when I actually got out of corporate America 6 years ago and started Premier Chess, and I started, like, you know, looking at the scholastic scene, you know, I was actually, like, pretty surprised to see all these unrated sections. You know, some tournaments would even have multiple unrated sections. You know, that to me was, like, crazy, actually. But you got to do essentially what the market demands. So, mm-hmm. But that said, you know, one thing I was actually very happy about in our last tournament in February was I got a lot of the kids who played our rookie section, the previous 2 months, to play the rated section. So
that's great.
That's your first. Yeah. So actually, I think the last tournament was their first tournament of the year, where we actually had more players in our rated section, which was great. You know, so I do think it's important to, get out there. And almost every day now I get questions from people. Oh, my chess.com rating is, you know, this rating, you know, what's my actual strength? You know, what's my, like, you know, approximate U.S. chess rating? I was like, I have no idea until you go out and play a tournament and see how you do. You know, so over the board chess is very different. So anyway, going back to your question, the king is the most important piece because it can never be captured, despite what a lot of beginners think. But the queen is the most valuable piece, you know, by far. So that's always something to remember.
You answered with both. I see what you did there.
Well, no, but the queen is, yes, I mean, by far the most valuable piece, right? That's why the queen is worth 9 points, and the king is actually worth infinity. But people do say that in the end game, the king actually becomes around 2 points because it does become an active piece and does have a little bit of value, not just hanging out in its castle, you know, that you do typically in the beginning of the game. So, I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, just to demonstrate there that one thing Raising Imagination tries to do is no matter what the activity is or what the task is, what the movie is, what the book is, we always try to ask some questions about it. Like, kind of like I just did, like, what is the most valuable piece there? And then take it a step further, like, what might we subliminally be taking away from that? If it is the queen, if it is the king, you know, what might that be teaching us about who is, you know, is there a gender that's most important? And do we agree with that? Do we not agree with that? How might that trickle into our thinking in other areas of society? Even just the chessboard itself, we would point out, you know, it's interesting here that it's a black and white board. You know, what do you think about that as kids? You know, do we live in a society where black people and white people are always at odds with each other? Always.
And I do, by the way, all the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little crazy, but, you know, when I teach, especially in, you know, some public schools where, you know, there are a lot of African-American students, I do get questions sometimes, why does white move first?
Yeah, exactly. And so I think in every opportunity, that's one thing that I really try to do at Raising Imagination is we don't shy away from these questions and we kind of go at them head on and say, you know, that's a really great question. And probably because whiteness has existed as a construct, as a way of supremacy, that's why the white piece would go first. Do we agree with that? Would we want to continue that in our lives and in our everyday actions. We would probably even talk about, you know, it's just a game, of course, but we would talk about, is there kind of a militarism or a violent component to it? And how do we feel about that? Where do we place that in who we are and in our young minds? That's the kind of thing that we do at Raising Imagination, which can apply to anything that young people or anyone is involved with.
So what types of programs do you actually do? Is it, you know, a lot of talks? Is it working with schools, working with companies? You know, what kind of programs do you actually, you know, do this through?
I have a series of workshops that I offer online or in person. And if you go to raisingimagination.com, there's a column at the top, Work with Amanda. And you can go down to workshops. There is one that is sort of the entry point workshop, which is just kind of raising imagination in general. Like, what do we mean by that as a mindset and as a tool and a theory of change? One is about kind of what I talked about before, this idea of raising children beyond the gender binary and into a true kind of feminist understanding of what it might mean to exist in the world as a feminist. There's one that is directed towards white parents who are raising white children and the importance of how do we talk to our children about race. And then there is a religious workshop called Faith Votes, which allows individuals in congregations to choose a pressing social issue of the day, whether it be guns, whether it be abortion, whether it be the attack on trans bodies or LGBTQ communities, whether it be environmental justice, and to kind of take a history of how the Christian evangelical movement in the United States has shaped what a political understanding of that issue might be, and allows people to ask questions about whether or not they agree with how we've kind of been co-opted to think some things equal morality when others don't. And how might we take our faith values into the voting booth? That workshop is called Faith Votes. And then beyond that, it is an online movement building platform. So I encourage people to follow along on Instagram. That's where we're most active because I will post articles and podcasts like this one and conversation starters, Instagram lives, where we can talk together about the things that are keeping us up at night. Right now, I will lift up that I've just started a GoFundMe called Solidarity Strollers. You know, New York City has received an influx of asylum seekers since the spring. And there are so many groups doing amazing work trying to welcome these new neighbors. Shout out to mutual aid groups and faith organizations and nonprofits that are trying to creatively meet their needs. And I have focused my efforts on a mutual aid center that happens every Monday at Judson Memorial Church. And there's a really amazing social worker there named Mary Posa. And she says, you know, I have an ongoing need. It's one need that is overwhelming. I have a waiting list of 40 plus for strollers. And, you know, she said this for 2 or 3 weeks. And finally, I was like, well, should we do something about this? I know a lot of parents in the city. Like, I feel like we could get some strollers. And so we've just started this GoFundMe. So if people are not based in New York City, you can donate to the GoFundMe so that we can purchase strollers and deliver them to these families. Or if you are in New York, there's a way to request someone to come pick up a stroller from you that you no longer need or see on the street or something if it's still in good condition. Or you can drop it off yourself at specific days and times. I also post things that are timely, that are happening in our city and in the world, that provide people avenues to give back.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, I'm very grateful, you know, truly for, you know, people like yourself who are, you know, bringing out these issues. And yeah, definitely recommend people get involved, you know, in any way that they can. And, you know, last question I really wanted to, you know, ask you is, like I said before, we've had, you know, some great female ambassadors to the game on the podcast. Like Susan and Elisa, who I mentioned before, obviously Jen Chahadi, actually runs the U.S. Women's Committee, you know, and others. But what do you think we could do to get, you know, a lot more female top players in the game?
Oh, that's a great question. I think, oh, goodness. I do think the Queen's Gambit was helpful. With that, you know, you have a lead character that is a female. That's going to go a long way in helping young girls see themselves in the game of chess. So anytime that we can have representation, it really does matter. I know that that seems like a little bit of a tired saying, but it is true. And I would love also not just, as we said before, women, but women of the global majority, meaning non-white women. You know, where are the, can we lift up more non-white women who are chess players? You know, Evan, I don't know about the makeup of your team or your staff, but if you could intentionally outreach to get women on your team, that's going to go a long way. And I know, yeah, there's that would go a long way. I would encourage.
Yeah. And look, that, you know, I'll let you continue in a second, but
no, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, it, look, it's a very good point. You know, look, I honestly, I don't like to admit, you know, right now we have, you know, like 50 coaches on our team, you know, which is great. But only two of those are women, mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, believe me, there's nothing more than I would love to, you know, have more people, you know, who are women on the team. But there's just, you know, frankly, not that many out there, you know, and the women coaches that are, you know, good, you know, and teaching are pretty much fully occupied, you know, mm-hmm. So,
in high demand.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like, you know, so it's a challenge and hopefully that will change, you know, for sure. So
I think you recognizing it as one, a problem and two, a goal is super important, right? Because we can't fix anything without first facing it. You know, that's a paraphrase James Baldwin quote there, but you know, so you've done that and it also takes time to commit to finding those people, right? You know, which I'm not saying is easy, but like, doing the, okay, where are these people? And not only where are they, because, you know, we know that there are phenomenal women chess players, but we have to find them. How can we, like we said, cultivate them? You know, how can we continue to build more of them and to outreach to them? I don't know what your outreach is like in schools, but maybe there could be some way that you could intentionally outreach for young girls to play. You know, I have a daughter as well, and we really are encouraging her. You know, she has played chess too, and we're going to encourage her, you know, a little bit more because it is important and it's not the norm. Like, do you want to tap into this? Do you want to go to the tournament? You know, mom will play with you. Mom will learn it. Mom will sit down with you and do this with you. Those types of things are important. And then the peer-to-peer outreach is so important. So if you do have, I was really, really actually happy about the number of who appeared to be girls at the tournament that I attended.
Sure.
Right? I feel like you have a lot of young girls that are playing.
Yeah, I mean, look, there are definitely some, but part of the problem too, honestly, is in elementary, middle school, it's a relatively even gap, actually. You know, after that, it gets difficult. It really does. So,
so then they can encourage each other. Like that peer-to-peer outreach is going to be super important. And for them to bring their friends along and for the guys, to be able to encourage their female friends to join as well will be important.
Yeah, well, I think that is, you know, yeah, definitely important. And, you know, it is one day at a time, you know, like, you know, at our pro, one of our bigger programs, Grace Church School, where we actually host our monthly tournaments. I'm happy to say that, you know, one of our two team captains there, is a girl, you know, and she, for instance, has brought actually several, female students, in the program recently. Like I said, it is one game at a time. And, Queen's Gambit, of course, was, massive.
Right.
I was actually quoted in the New York Times by my friend Dylan McLean about how women got into chess because of it.
Oh, that's great.
And how our virtual classes went up 150%, at the time. So, for sure. Actually just saw Dylan for the first time in person in many years at the Amateur Team East last month, actually. So anyway, really want to thank you for, taking some time talking about Women's History Month, to rallies, to some of the value of chess and gender norms, racial questions, female empowerment in chess, some of the inspiration of the Queen's Gambit and more. Is there anything else you'd like to add while you're on the podcast today?
I don't think so, Evan. All the best to you and your company. And I will be in touch with Evan, and maybe we could post the link to the GoFundMe in when we publish the podcast. That will be great for people to share and support.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that'll definitely be, of course, in the show notes as well. So for sure. And, lastly, if anyone does want to reach out to you, figure out, how you can partner with the organization, get involved, donate, et cetera, how could people get a hold of you?
RaisingImagination.com is the best way. You can schedule a meeting with me right there online, shoot me an email. And then on Instagram, I'm also at Raising Imagination.
Okay, amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for your inspiration.
Thank you, Evan. Have a great day.
Likewise.